Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on separation of church and state right after this. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think is wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious by now that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools, banned from our public institutions, and banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these ten simple, time-tested laws, we see the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place, and they're teaching these ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, our public institutions, and we've made them a part of our national psyche. Now, you know, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years or so. Are you aware, for instance, that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but your daughter can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent? That's why I contend that the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments. They even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there's still at least one school left in America that's still teaching this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits that we all receive for their observance. You know, every law has a penalty, and you don't have to know what the penalty to the law is to suffer from its effect. So whether we call this the Mosaic Law, the law of God, the common law, natural law, or karma, or something else, it's automatic. And it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happen to be the natural penalties for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us a, well, do better than that. Click onto the archives page. The archives page, you can download it right there in the privacy of your own home, georgegordon.org, or click onto the archives page when you get there. Hey, we've been talking about the Ten Commandments in American law. You'll find in Australia, New Zealand, Western Europe, you'll find the Ten Commandments in your law also. And I'll bet you that you'll find the Ten Commandments in India, Pakistan, and all over Africa. Everywhere the British Empire left its indelible imprint, I think you're going to find vestiges of the Ten Commandments. It's the common law, we call it, in Anglo-Saxon administration. And when you chase it back through history, you come out to Moses at Mount Sinai. It's not very common today. We here in the Western world have been working as hard as we can to stamp it out. In fact, that's what separation of church and state was intended to do, was to stamp out the Ten Commandments in our minds and in our legal process. And it's worked pretty well, pretty well. The average Joe Sixpack American hasn't got a clue as to how the Ten Commandments impact upon him or whether they should or shouldn't or do or don't, and he couldn't care less. But I thought I'd bring it to the attention of some of us who might be interested, who might have an eye to see or an ear to hear. Now gather around, boys and girls, I'm going to tell you a story. Remember this week I told you that the penal clause to the contract is in Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26. I've covered those a time or two in the past. I won't do that again, but there's a story that God, the Creator, gave to us. It's in Deuteronomy 29. So right after he got through with the penal clause in chapter 28, he went on in chapter 29 and he said, here, Moses, tell these people this story for me. Give them this story. And it's quite a little story, and it has to do with you and I today in the latter times. Now, one day, a lady called me. She was an Adventist. She revealed herself. She said, I'm an Adventist, and the God that I serve is a loving God, and I could never worship the God that you're describing. And I thought about that, and I said, well, what God am I describing here that you couldn't worship, lady? Well, it's this God of the Bible. It's this God that gave us Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26. Now, Christians don't read the Bible. They go to church, and they listen to their preacher read the Bible, and he tells them what it is that they're supposed to know. They don't look at themselves. And it's called in 1 Timothy 3, verse 6, God identifies these as silly women laden with sin. Now, my Aunt Bessie was an Adventist, and God love her. She was a kindly lady. And And you know, everybody's got an Aunt Bessie somewhere back there in their family. And my Aunt Bessie used to use the term, "Isn't that just precious?" she was something else. Hey, isn't that just precious? Well, yeah, it probably was, Aunt Bessie, and I don't deny it. And there's some other terms, though, used in the Scripture. And the God, you know, the guy that is, it's the barbarian God. We see God here as being uncivilized and barbaric. And then that the Ten Commandments are barbaric. But he has a few things to say for himself. And I always thought, you know, before you want to call some guy something that maybe he didn't want to hear, like you picture this, you know, you walk into a bar, and here's this big, dirty Hell's Angel in there, see? And then he's drinking a beer. So you sidle up to the bar, and you sit down next to him, you order a beer, and as soon as it's delivered, you take the beer, you give him the finger, and then you throw your beer in his face. What do you think that guy's going to do? And is he going to say, "Well, for goodness sakes, Charlie, would you please be more careful with your beer?" Or do you think maybe he's going to grab a hold of you and shake you until your teeth rattle? Well, the same thing is going on here. You know, nice people go to church twice a week, and they don't see themselves as being bad or wicked or terrible, awful people. But they don't practice the law of the Scripture, and they say bad things about the guy that wrote it. And I say, you know, they say bad things. You know, they call him barbaric and cruel and uncivilized. And sometimes maybe not with their words, but with their deeds, with their actions. Jesus made an observation one time. He said, "Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not those things which I say?" Well, here in chapter 29, God comes up to Moses one day, and he says, "Hey, Moses, come on over here. Sit down here. Write this down for me, would you? And I want you to rehearse this in the ears of the people. I want you to tell them for me. I want you to give them this message." That's why I said, well, gather around, boys and girls. Let me tell you the story. It says here in chapter 29, this is Deuteronomy now, chapter 29, verse 1, he says, "These are the words of the covenant which the Eternal commanded Moses to make with the children of Israel in the land of Moab, beside the covenant which he made with them in Horeb." Now, a covenant is a contract. A covenant is a contract. And there's a number of these contracts that are in full force and effect right now today. God had a contract with Abraham that's still working today. He had a contract with Isaac, another contract with Jacob. He had a contract with David. He has a contract with us today, you and me. You and me, we fit into this. And these contracts over here, once they proceed out of your mouth, go to Numbers chapter 30 here, once these contracts are articulated, they cannot return again. And they're in force and effect forever. And as I've said before, I don't know exactly how long forever is, but I do know that it ain't up yet. So when we're thinking about these latter days, latter times, latter days, these terms like "vengeance is mine," says the Eternal, or "jealous," God calls himself jealous. He says, "I will repay him that hates me to his face." He talks about his enemies. He talks about what proceeds out of his mouth. He talks about anger. He says, "Will you provoke me to anger?" I used to have a daddy, and my daddy, when he was provoked to anger, it always came out bad for little Georgie. I can never remember a time when my dad was angry that it bode well for little Georgie. In fact, in almost every case that I can remember, there was always great pain, suffering, and anguish. Well, the same thing is true here with the creator of the universe. He's a nice guy. He's got a great sense of humor, and he's pretty civil most of the time. But he goes postal on us every once in a while. And he's about to go postal. We're reaching a period of time in the Earth's history when he's about to go postal. And the last big one was called Noah's Flood. And in Matthew 24, the Messiah, this is sweet Jesus now, you know, you can listen to this now, Christians, you can listen here. Sweet Jesus, you know, the guy that said, "How come you're calling me Jesus, or how come you're calling me Lord, Lord, and you don't do a damn thing I tell you?" That's a good question. Because back here in Moses' day, God told Moses, he said, it's going to come to a point in time when these people will not endure sound doctrine. That they're not going to perform on the covenant. They're not going to perform on the contract. And when they don't perform on the contract, it's going to trigger the penal clause in the deal, in the contract. Now, the penal clause in the contract, I mentioned this to you the other day. It's in Leviticus chapter 26, whole chapter, and Deuteronomy 28. But in chapter 29, he says, now, listen, we've got a covenant here. Verse 1, he says, we've got a deal. And our problem here in America and Canada and Australia and around the Western Anglo-Saxon world is that we, that's you and me, are in breach of contract. I mean, it isn't rocket science here. You know, anybody with half a brain and one eye, you know, ought to be able to figure this out. We are in breach of contract, and there's a penal clause coming down upon us. And that's what this great tribulation is about. That's why the world is in this great financial crisis. That's why we're headed toward World War III. Things are getting bad. They're bad now, and they're getting worse. Now, there's got to be a cause and effect relationship here. And so that's what this chapter 29 is about. And he says, hey, listen, gather around, boys and girls, and listen up. So Moses called unto all of Israel, and he said to them, you have seen all that the Eternal did before your eyes in the land of Egypt unto Pharaoh, and unto all of his servants, and to all of his land. the great temptations which your eyes have seen, the signs, and those great miracles. And yet the Eternal has not given you a heart to perceive, and eyes to see, and ears to hear unto this day. Now listen, that's a pretty important statement. Moses is speaking to a big group of people, and he says, you know, you people don't get it. You haven't gotten it up to this moment in time, and you're not very likely to get it in the future. And so I'm going to tell you the answer. And the answer is, and now he's coming on to, you haven't had eyes to see, and you don't have ears to hear, which is fulfilled in the New Testament. Remember, Jesus said the same thing when they asked him in Matthew 13, why do you speak to these people in parables? And he said, I'm speaking to them in parables so that they won't be responsible for their actions. And most of you people, like my Aunt Bessie, silly women laden with sin, not seeing and not hearing, are going to go into this great tribulation, and you're going to cry out, and you're going to pray to Jesus. And he's already said, I'm not going to hear you. I'm not going to listen to this. Now, we've all of us had plenty of time now to wake up and smell the coffee. And if we haven't by now, it's not very likely that we're going to anytime soon. Now, I'm not a preacher, and I'm not a pope or a prophet. I'm not here to get you to give your heart to Jesus. I'm a reporter, and I'm just reporting geopolitical facts. So when I listen to Rush Limbaugh, God love him, you know, or Sean Hannity and who are Art Bell, you know, and all these nice guys, and they're out here telling you, you know, look what's going on with the Barack Obamas and the national health care insurance, and look what's going on in Iraq and Afghanistan and blah, blah, blah. And they're all telling you, you know, hey, pay attention, look what's going on. But they didn't point out that there's a God in heaven and that this guy is in on the deal also. See, they haven't told you, hey, did you know that there's a guy over here called the creator of the universe, and he's also got some input into international geopolitics? So that's what I thought I would bring to your attention today. And it has to do with this book called The Ten Commandments and Their Influence on American Law. Because here in America, we have the Ten Commandments in our legal system from top to bottom, end to end. And I've been showing you that all week. And that our forefathers, our founding fathers, had no intention of separating the church from our government. They had every intention of separating our government from the church, which is exactly what we have turned on its ear, turned upside down. We now have our government dictating to the church, and the church is castrated. It can't function. It cannot point out the wickedness and the evil that goes on in our governmental institutions. They're muzzled. They've been silenced. And so there's an outcome that comes from that. And so chapter 29 here is telling us, here's the outcome. So in verse 5 he said, and I have led you 40 years in the wilderness, and your clothes are not waxen old upon you, and your shoe is not waxen old upon your foot. And you have not eaten bread, neither have you drunk wine or strong drink, that you might know that I am the Eternal your God. And when you came into this place, Sihon the king of Heshbon and Og the king of Bashan came out against us unto battle, and we smote them. And we took their land, and we gave it for an inheritance unto the Reubenites and to the Gadites and to the half-tribe of Manasseh. Keep therefore the words of this covenant, and do them, that you may prosper in all that you do. Now in verse 10 he goes on and he says, now you stand here this day, all of you, before the Eternal your God, your captains of your tribes, and your elders, and your officers, and all the men of Israel. You're all standing here now, listening to me. You and your little ones and your wives, and the stranger that's within your camp, from the hewer of your wood unto the drawer of your water, all of you Hispanics and all of you blacks and Asians, you know, you're all standing here. You're all participants now here in the great American experiment. All right? He said that you should enter into covenant with the Eternal your God and into his oath, which the Eternal your God makes with you this day, that he may establish you today for a people unto himself, and that he may be unto you a God, as he has said unto you, and as he has sworn unto your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Neither with you only do I make this covenant and this oath, but with him that stands here with us this day before the Eternal, and also with him that is not here with us this day. Now, boys and girls, as a matter of law, what this is called is an adhesion contract. This is a strong unilateral power. We call him God. Now, if you were doing this with an insurance agent, we would call it the insurance company. When you go down to get your driver's license, it's an adhesion contract that you're making with a strong unilateral sovereign power, the state of Texas. The state of Texas is a God. California is a God. Germany is a God. And we have heaped to ourselves these foreign and alien gods, and we worship them. Worship, that means we obey the law of our God. We obey the laws of our sovereign. A sovereign is a lawmaker. And when we worship, when we practice the laws of our gods, then we're practicing idolatry. You know, the average Joe Sixpack, he doesn't think when he goes down to vote that he's practicing idolatry or violating the First Commandment, but that's what it boils down to. And that's because we've got a prior engagement here. See, we've got a contract with this guy. Now, you and I, we're not standing with Moses and our forefathers 84 generations back out here at Mount Horeb. And he points that out right here in verse 15. He says, but with him that stands here with us this day before the eternal our God, and also with him that is not here with us this day. And that's you and me, boys and girls. We weren't there. And this is called an adhesion contract, and it inures to the heirs and assigns forever. And again, I don't know how long forever is, but I do know it's not up yet. So this contract adheres to us right now in the 21st century. Now, we're in breach of the contract. Your great-great-granddaddy, he's dead and buried. He's waiting for the resurrection. You and I are alive and breathing today, and we're in breach of contract, and we're about to receive our comeuppance. Or as they say down here in the Ozarks, an ass-kicking, like there hasn't been since probably Noah's flood. Because the Messiah, that's Jesus, you know, for you Christians out there, you know, Jesus, in Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21, he said this thing's going to be worse than Noah's flood. Now, I'll leave it to you to figure out how that could be. I don't know. I'm just telling you that's what he said. Go read it for yourself. Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21. He said this thing's going to be worse than Noah's flood. And that sends me a very strong signal. Because as I broached the subject, I said, now you're going to walk into the bar. You're going to sit up next to this big guy, and you're going to throw your beer in his face after you give him the finger, and then say, hey, can I buy you a beer? Son, I don't think that you can do that and get away with it. Nobody in his right mind would do that down at the Blue Room. Now, we Americans, Canadians, Australians, Britons, and so on, we've been doing that to our God now for about, I'd say about 1933 with Franklin Roosevelt. We got after it pretty hot and heavy with the New Deal and the Fair Deal, and we've been at it hot and heavy from that point on. And this guy, he talks about provoking him to anger in Deuteronomy 4, verse 25 and 26. Well, shucks, let me just flip over there and I'll read one to you. Here in Deuteronomy 4, verses 25 and 26. Let me see if I can find that here pretty quickly. Here it is. He says, when you shall beget children and children's children, and when you shall have remained long in the land, and after you have corrupted yourselves and made a graven image, you know, like the Washington Monument and the Statue of Liberty, or the likeness of anything, and shall do evil in the sight of the Eternal, you know, like 2 million abortions a year, things like that, using a Federal Reserve to make unjust weights and balances, things like that. And when you shall have done evil in the sight of the Eternal your God, to provoke him to anger, when you won't practice the Sabbath, and you're out here, you know, practicing abortion and unjust weights and balances, and oppressing widows and orphans, and, you know, just on and on it goes, oppressing the elderly. He says, I call heaven and earth to witness against you this day that you shall soon utterly perish from off the land whereinto you go over Jordan to possess it, and you shall not prolong your days upon it, but you shall be utterly destroyed. Now, our forefathers were totally destroyed and scattered from the promised land to Western Europe and then North America. And he talks about the latter days. You want to write this down? Latter, L-A-T-T-E-R, days. And so I chased that out, and there's about 15 places here in the scripture that talks about the latter days. You know, the time when we're facing World War III and the collapse of civilization and the Second Coming. I mean, hell, even your government's telling you that with global warming, you know, we're facing a crisis of unimagined proportions. Well, I don't think that we need to worry too much about global warming, but I think we're probably due for a hiney kicking by the boss when he comes back. And I think he's getting close to it. So when we're talking about the latter days, go to Numbers 24:14 and Deuteronomy 4:30. Well, we're right here in Deuteronomy 4. Let me take a look at Deuteronomy 4, verse 30. He says here, and starting in verse 29, he says, but if from thence you shall seek the Eternal your God and shall find him, and if you seek him with all your heart and with all of your soul, when you're in tribulation and all these things are come upon you, even in the latter days, if you turn to the Eternal your God and shall be obedient to his voice, he will not forsake you and neither destroy you, nor forget the covenant of your fathers which he swore unto them. So there's a redemption here. So you can come back like the prodigal son and say, you know, I think I made a mistake back here. I think this idolatry and these criminal activities that I've been engaged in is probably not good for me, and I think I'll change my ways. You know, you can always do that. I don't expect Henry Kissinger, David Rockefeller, or the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderbergers, or the CFR, or maybe members of our Congress and our legislatures to do that, but you and I could. Just the little guys, you know, the bottom feeders. So in the latter days, take a look in Jeremiah 23:20 or Jeremiah 30, verse 24, Jeremiah 48, verse 47, 49, 39, so on. Look up the word latter, L-A-T-T-E-R, days. Chase it out in the concordance. I think you'll be amazed. Amazed. So the Creator now has given us a warning, and that's what this thing here is. This chapter 29, this is for everybody now. That's why I said gather around, boys and girls, and I'll tell you a story. And that's because, you know, the boss says he wants everybody to know who did it and why. When he gets through, he wants everybody to know, it was me, I did it, and here's why. So going on, verse 16, he says, "For you know how we have dwelt in the land of Egypt, and how we came through the nations which you passed by. And you have seen their abominations and their idols, wooden, stone, silver, and gold, which were among them. Lest there should be among you a man or woman or family or tribe whose heart turns away this day from the Eternal our God to go and serve the gods of these nations, lest there should be among you a root that bears gall and wormwood." You know, we Americans, we're the champions. We have invited millions of people to come into the United States. You know, people that worship idols, people that practice Buddhism and Shintoism and Confucianism and Muslimism and so on. I mean, we weren't content, you know, to go butt into their affairs. We had to invite them in here. Today in America, in case you didn't know this, today in America, one-third of the people in this country are foreigners. We have invited one-third of our population, 100 million people in this country, are foreigners. And 200 million of us are native-born, native white Anglo-Saxons. And so in 1960, to give you a contrast here, 90% of us were white Anglo-Saxons and 10% were all others. That's why the stranger that's within our gates now is rising up high above us and bringing us down very low. So the die is cast. You're not going to turn it around now. You don't need to worry about voting for this guy or that guy. Just sit back and relax, ride the bus, and you're going to see a great scene here. You're going to see a scene that has never been acted out on this planet in the past before. Yep, it's called the Great Tribulation. This is going to be the granddaddy of all granddaddies here. So in verse 19, he says, "And it came to pass, when he hears the words of this curse, that he bless himself in his heart, saying, I shall have peace, though I walk in the imagination of my own heart, to add drunkenness to thirst. The Eternal will not spare him, and then the anger of the Eternal and his jealousy shall smoke against that man, and all the curses that are written in this book shall be upon him." All the curses written in this book. That's quite a story. Chapter 29 is a curse. He says, hey, wake up now. We have a deal. And our deal calls for, and you guys are in breach of contract. Now shape up, or here's what I'm going to do. Hey, we'll talk about that when we come back. I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We are sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on a compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our webpage, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download it right there. That's the archives page at georgegordon.org. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements and recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors and publications of the books and papers and periodicals that we're endorsing or recommending are necessarily going to reciprocate and endorse and recommend the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reading here, telling you a story here. This is a story that comes from God the Creator. It's chapter 29 of Deuteronomy, in which he points out that we have a contract, and we're in breach of contract, and he says, now, because of this breach of contract, here's what I'm going to do. That's just in case you end up in the tribulation, and then you say to yourself, well, why is God doing this to me? Like that nice Advent lady that wrote me a letter, and she said, I could never worship this God that you're talking about here on the radio because he's not kind and gentle. He's an uncivilized barbarian. And I just said, well, let me tell you about this guy because he's actually got a pretty good sense of humor. He's got a pretty good sense of justice, but he's like my old man. He never did take a lot of guff off of a pimply-faced punk kid. And I suspect that this God here is saying just about the same thing. You know, I'm being pushed, and I'm being provoked, and I'm getting tired of it. In fact, he uses this word provoke a few times in Numbers 14, verse 11, Deuteronomy 4, verses 25 and 26. He asks you the question, are you going to provoke me to anger? You mean you're going to throw a beer in my face and give me the finger? You people out there, do you really think that you're going to do that and get away with it? Now, I don't know of anybody in his right mind that would do that down at O'Leary's or down at the Blue Room, but we've been doing that to the creator of the universe now for about 75 years, maybe a little bit longer. And then I sense that he's getting a belly full of this and that he's going to come unhinged and go postal on us here pretty shortly. Going on, verse 21, he said, the Eternal shall separate him unto evil out of all the tribes of Israel, according to all of the curses of the covenant that are written in this book of the law. Notice that word covenant comes up again. This contract comes up again. I'm not sure that most religious people understand the law as it relates to contract, the law of contracts. Hey, once this contract's in full force and effect, you either perform on it or suffer the penalty. That's the end of the argument. That's the way it happens when you walk into your civil courts today. It's either perform on the contract or we suffer the penalty. Sometimes the penalty is written up in the statute. Sometimes it's written up in the body of the contract. But there's a penalty. There's a penal clause. There's a penalty that comes out every time. Now, here in the scripture, it's written in black and white, unmistakable. Here's what I'm going to do. In verse 22, he says, so that the generation to come of your children that shall rise up after you, and the stranger that shall come from a far land, and shall say, when they see the plagues of that land and the sicknesses which the Eternal has laid upon it, and that the whole land thereof is brimstone and salt and burning, and that it not be sown, nor beareth, nor any grass grows therein, like the overthrow of Sodom and Gomorrah, of Amath and Zeboam, which the Eternal overthrew in his anger and in his wrath. Hey, does this guy get angry? Look up the word anger in Deuteronomy 4:25 or Deuteronomy 6, verse 15, Deuteronomy 7, verse 4. He says, will you provoke me to anger? I did that once. My dad, you know, he was laying on the couch there one day, and he said, hey, boy, come here. And I don't know where I got this, but I must have seen some movie. And so I was kind of insolent. I couldn't see myself, but, you know, looking back on it, I think I was kind of insolent. And I drugged my heels, you know, I walked across the room. I was doing what he told me. He said, hey, boy, come here. He used to call me boy, in case some of you people out there, you didn't like the word boy. That was my moniker. He'd say, hey, boy, come here. And so I'm dragging my feet across the living room as I'm walking over to the couch. And I'll never forget the expression of my dad. He looked at me like, I can't believe I'm seeing this. Surely, this can't be happening in front of my face. This kid, he might do this behind my back, but to do this right in front of me? He bounded off of the couch. I don't think I've ever seen him get up off the couch faster than he did that day. And he grabbed me and he threw me into the wall, which was the standard modus operandi. And as I've explained in the past, you know, when a 12-year-old kid hits the wall with sufficient velocity, he will bounce off and fall on the floor. This was one of those times when I hit the wall with sufficient velocity that I fell on the floor. And in that little brief period of time, maybe it takes 1 second, maybe it takes two, I'm not quite sure. In the spinning of the room and in the overwhelming pain and anguish, I've never been able to keep track of the time, not that I ever had a watch to keep track of it with, but the next thing I knew was that his belt was off and he was just flailing away, just whipping the hell out of me. And there I was on the floor pleading, please, please, no more, no, stop, stop. Well, it comes to an end, you know, at some point in time, you know, even fathers, you know, they're upset, they get tired after a while. And so he quit, and he went over and he sat down on the couch and he said, let's try that over again. You go back over on the other side of the room and I'm going to call you. And I went back over to the other side of the room, and he said, hey, boy, come here. And I said, yes, sir, and I ran. So I just thought I'd point that out, that it may take that. Now, it only took one time for me. Boy, I never did that again. I made a few mistakes around my daddy, but that was one that I never repeated. Now, we've been making some mistakes around old dad here, and I'm sure that by the time he gets through with these penal clause, these penal statutes here, I think that we're going to say yes, sir, and run when it's over. I'm not sure that anybody's going to listen beforehand. Now, two or three of you might. If you can learn from somebody else's mistake, let me tell you, that's the way to do that. If you could watch me get flailed away on, then you just picture that and then say to yourself, well, that's what's going to happen to me if I get insolent. So tuck it away in your heart and see what happens. All right, now, with that out of the way, let's go on here. Will you provoke me to anger? Even all the nations shall say, wherefore has the Eternal done thus unto this land? What meaneth the heat of this great anger? Then men shall say, because they have forsaken the covenant, they have violated the contract of the Eternal God of their fathers, which he made with them when he brought them forth out of the land of Egypt. For they went and served other gods and worshipped them, gods whom they knew not, and whom he had not given unto them. That kind of reminds me of this Paris Hilton. I was watching Leno last night, and he was showing some pictures, you know. She got caught, I guess, the other day with some cocaine. And I think about these Hollywood celebrities, you know, these ignoramuses that run around, silly women laden with sin, and set an example for all the rest of our daughters so that they too can behave like sluts. And the parents love it. I am amazed when I walk in, like I was in the Battlefield Mall the other day and I was walking around in there. And I mean to tell you that when I was a kid, we used to have women that dressed up, you know, like sluts. We called those prostitutes. They were wearing their uniforms, you know, they'd be out there on the street wearing their uniforms so that you could tell which one was for sale and which one wasn't. I mean to tell you, boys and girls, I think about 90% of the women walking up, especially the young girls, you know, from 13 to about 25, walking around there in the hall, they're all dressed up for sale. I imagine if you went up and said, okay, sweetheart, what's the price? I mean, she'd probably be offended at you. I'm not sure that they know what they're doing. But, you know, like silly women laden with sin, walking around like sluts, trying to emulate Paris Hilton and the rest of these sluts from Hollywood. And they offend the Creator, who told our women, you know, dress modestly, you know, look intelligent. Don't walk around advertising it. And they do. And so there's a comeuppance from that. I just wanted to point that out. And when it comes down, it's going to be nasty. And you people are going to say, this God is a brute. This God is uncivilized. He's what we were going to call that. No, I had another label to hang on him there. Uncivilized. You know, he's not kind and gentle. That's what George Bush said. You know, we want to be kind and gentle. And, hey, this guy's not bad. Take a look at Leviticus 26, the first 14 verses, and then Deuteronomy 28. He said, hey, listen, if you play the game correctly, here's what I'm going to give you. And if you don't play the game correctly, the balance of the chapter says, here's what I'm going to do to you. So I don't think that the offer that he made was all that bad. Looked like a pretty good deal to me. Anyway, well, he goes on. He says this. He said, the anger of the Eternal was kindled against the land to bring upon it all the curses that are written in this book. And the Eternal rooted them out of their land in anger and in wrath and in great indignation and cast them into another land as it is to this day. The secret things belong unto the Eternal our God, but those things which are revealed belong to us and to our children forever, that we may do all the words of this law. So I thought I would bring that. That's the last verse. It's verse 29. It's Deuteronomy 29, verse 29. It's 29 verses in the chapter. He says, now listen, children, wake up. Smell the coffee here, because here's what's coming down. Now, the reason that we're doing this series of programs, a book here called The Ten Commandments and Their Influence on American Law. And it's written by William J. Federer, William J. F-E-D-E-R-E-R, dynamite book. It's about a 1 in 100. It's surely a 1 in 20. And I can't remember ever reading another book. I've read other books that deal with the Ten Commandments and law. This is a legal brief. It was written with the express intent of taking this to the United States Supreme Court. And it talks about all 10 of the Ten Commandments and about what our forefathers had to say about it. And I said, this letter that was written by Thomas Jefferson has been misquoted by the ACLU and by those that hate God and hate the Bible and hate the Ten Commandments. And they have taken it into our courts and they've argued it, and the church, being totally emasculated and castrated, has not come out in defense of the Bible. I've never heard a preacher defend the Bible or the Ten Commandments. Have you? Make one. Name one. Send me an email. Tell me. Name one. Now, most of them will tell you very plainly the Ten Commandments were nailed to the cross with Jesus and you don't have to practice that anymore. I guess what that means, it's all right if I sleep with your wife and steal your lawnmower. That's the only thing I can figure. Now, if that's not true, and if Jesus wasn't lying to us in Matthew 5:17 when he said, "Think not that I've come to destroy the law of the prophets," or in Matthew 19:16 when this guy came up to him and said, "What do I have to do to go to heaven?" And he said, "Keep the Ten Commandments." And then he listed five or six of them there, articulated them. I can't imagine being any plainer than that, but that isn't what you hear from your preachers and your pulpit parents now, is it? Now, the other side to this that I've been bringing to your attention is that there's going to be a penalty. This thing of kicking God and the Ten Commandments out of our schools and our public institutions over there is going to come to a no good end. That's my prediction. Now, that's my personal opinion. Remember, I'm not a prophet. But I did read to you from the prophets who said, "Here's what I'm going to do to you," and I just read you the story. You can believe it or reject it. Hell, I'm not here to argue with you about it. And you can read it for yourself. And you don't have to believe it. It's irrelevant and immaterial whether you do or don't. But you might be able to do something to save yourself out of this. And I don't think you're going to save your nation, but you might be able to save you, maybe even your family, if you get after it. So there's that little part to the story. Now, in Deuteronomy 7, verse 10, there's a statement made in here by the Creator himself. He can speak for himself. I always tell people, you know, "Hey, why don't you go listen to the boss, because he's free, white, and 21. He's of age, and he can speak for himself." Listen to this. He says, "Know, therefore, that the eternal your God, he is God, the faithful God, which keeps covenant," see that word covenant, "keeps the contract and mercy with them that love him and keep his commandments to 1,000 generations." Those that keep his commandments. Verse 10, "and repays them that hates him to their face to destroy them. And he will not be slack to him that hates him, and he will repay him to his face." My dad did that. He always repaid me right to my face. He was never sneaking around. He'd grab me, bounce me off the wall, beat the living hell out of me, and then say, "Let's try that one over again. Let's see if we can get that one straight." I called him Gordon one time. I said, "Hey, Gordon." I only did that once. I only drug my heels and acted stupid once. I was a very precocious little critter. I could learn real fast. And when I was a kid, you had to learn real fast. Otherwise, you'd end up dead. And I'm not quite sure what would have happened. You know, if I would have done what I see you youngsters doing today to your parents, the insolence. See, when I was a kid, you had to address your parents, "Yes, sir. No, sir. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am." I mean, I haven't heard that for so long out of a kid's mouth, I'm not sure that there's anybody left in America that knows how to say "yes, sir" or "no, sir." You have to get into the Army before you can learn how to say "yes, sir" or "no, sir." Hell, I learned to do that when I was about 3-4 years old. I would have made a great soldier, you know that? You, all you sergeants out there, you know, God, you'd have loved me in basic training because I could already say "yes, sir" or "no, sir." Hell, I learned how to do that when I was just a little tyke. I think I'd have done good in here. All right, now he uses the word "destroy" over here. God uses the word "destroy." In Genesis chapter 6, verses 7, 13, and 17, he's talking about the earth, and he says, "I'm going to destroy the earth." And then, a little later on, he uses this word "destroy" in Deuteronomy 9, verse 19, and Deuteronomy 25 and 26. So in 9:19, it says, "And I was afraid of the anger and the hot displeasure wherewith the Eternal was wroth against you to destroy you, but the Lord hearkened unto me at that time also." Now, if you want to read a really unusual story, it's in Deuteronomy chapter 9. Just take the whole chapter. It's got 29 verses in it also. And there are seven examples in there where God was going to destroy the entire nation of Israel. He told Moses, he said, "Separate yourself from those clowns and watch me consume them." And Moses intervened for us seven times. And it lists these seven times. And he tells you when it happened and where. You got the names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence in there. And Moses stuck it to him a couple of times. He said, "Now listen, wait a minute. God, wait. If you kill all these people, then the Egyptians and all these foreigners around here is going to say, 'See, he led these people out of Egypt, but he wasn't powerful enough to lead them into the promised land. He took them out in the wilderness and they all died.' And they'll make fun of you and reproach you," which no doubt was pretty true. And so God said, "Well, okay, yeah, I hear you, Moses. Now here's what we're going to do." He offered Moses this deal. He should have offered it to me. I would have taken him up on it. He said, "Hey, Moses, separate yourself, and I'll kill all of these people, and I will make a great nation of you. I'll take your children, and we'll go from you on." See? But he repented of the evil that he thought in his heart, and he said, "Now, you're right, Moses. We'll back off on that one. And what I'll do, we'll just write this down. We'll make a history of it so we can tell people in the future." And that's where I'm suggesting that you go take a look at what happened. The only reason that you and I are here today is because Moses didn't take God up on his offer. Otherwise, I never would have been born, and neither would you. And there would only be the descendants of Moses to this day, just like there's only the descendants of Noah to this day. Noah could not save his own mother and father. Noah could not save his brothers and sisters. Noah could not save his aunts and uncles and cousins. He could only save himself, his wife, and his three sons and his three daughters-in-law. That was it. Methuselah, the guy that lived to be 969 years old, you know, the oldest guy in the Bible, that was Noah's daddy. He couldn't save him. Methuselah died in the flood. He died the year of the flood, in the flood, an old man, full of years. But he didn't die of old age. He died of water inhalation, just like everybody else. Now keep that one in mind, because a lot of times people come here to the law school and they say, oh my God, I've got to save my mom and dad and my sisters and brothers. And they go out and they start talking to all these people, and then they turn all these people against them because they think they're crazy. They think they're nutcases. Now, except the Father draw you, you can't come. Many are called, but few are chosen. And on top of that, these people have eyes and can't see, and they've got ears and they can't hear. Save your breath. And that's what casting pearls before swine is all about. Why are you casting pearls before swine? Doesn't gain you anything, get you a blot. And all they're going to do is get ticked off at you. Nobody's gonna listen to you. It's crazy. Now, you might be able to do something for yourself, but you're not going to do very much for anybody else. They're not going to listen. But I thought I would tell you the story. I'm going to tell you the story. It's in Deuteronomy chapter 29, where the contract comes into force and effect. And he points out very clearly that he made this contract with your forefathers 84 generations back. And he said, I made this contract with them that stand here this day, and with those that aren't standing here this day. That's you and me. We were not there on that day, but we're here today. And we are those heirs and assigns forever. All right, now the book, again, one more time. It's called The Ten Commandments and Their Influence on American Law. It's William J. Federer. Dynamite book, about 1 in 100. Here's the phone number. 1-888-USA-WORD. And it's called AmeriSearch Incorporated. And you can get them on the internet at www.amerisearch.net. Probably going to cost you $15-$20, but it's worth every penny. Again, that's AmeriSearch.net. And the phone number again, 1-888-USA-WORD. The book, The Ten Commandments and Their Influence on American Law by William J. Federer. Hey, that's it, boys and girls. I've got to wrap it up right there and remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.